This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. On December 11th, 2010, the four-wheel drive Lo Chin Wee was driving collided with a truck on the Jalan Klang to Teluk Intan Road. Chin Wee died on the spot and his wife, DB Yook, subsequently filed a claim for loss of support. The Sessions Court in 2011 awarded Biyok more than 150,000 ringgit. However, last week, the Court of Appeal reversed that decision because it ruled that she was not Lo's lawful wife. She went through a Chinese customary marriage with Lo but did not register their marriage. Today, we have family lawyer Vicky Alahakon in the studio with me to discuss the implications of this ruling. We'll be getting her personal opinion and perspective on the case. Welcome to the show, Vicky.
Hi, Lynn. Good afternoon.
So when you read about this decision then, what were your thoughts?
Well, actually, I was not quite surprised by the decision of the court, simply because we know that all marriages now have to be registered under the Law Reform Marriage and Divorce Act. But the question here is whether you link the Law Reform Act to the Civil Law Act, which is what was used in this case. So that was the issue that the court had to decide, which act is to be applied. And unfortunately, the Civil Law Act is a very old act, and that's a 1956 act. And it hasn't been amended nor repealed. And we need to actually amend all our old acts to standardize the same, especially with regard to the definitions of children, women, wives, spouses, because we have different definitions in all these acts.
Well, the definition of a registered marriage is easy to understand. You know, it's people who go to register a marriage. But when we refer to a customary marriage, what does that mean? Does it hold any legal status at all?
Well, to be honest, you find that most couples do go through customary marriages. And what do customary marriages mean? It simply means that each couple who hail from different faiths, for instance, if you're a Christian or a Hindu, or even Hindu Sikhs, they go through the customary marriages of maybe for Hindus, they tie a tali in the temple. Christians get married in church before a priest, and you also have the Sikhs getting married in the temple. So these are considered customary marriages. But what is most important in this case, which we have to stress, is that these marriages that they undergo are customary marriages, but you need to register them with the JPN, Jabatan ke na Jabatan Pendaftaran, Negara.
You brought up the issue of faith. News reports stressed the fact that this was a case about a non-Muslim couple. Would the implications have been different for a Muslim marriage?
Well, actually, no, because this would apply even to Muslim couples. And if you read the Islamic Law Act together with the Law Reform Act, most of the wordings in both the acts are almost identical. So if Madam D, in this case, was a Muslim woman, she would face the same fate as what any other woman would have faced in the court. So there is no distinction in this case,
When it comes to loss of dependency, who has the right to claim for that?
Under the definition of a dependent in this case, we are talking about fatal accidents. And whoever is a dependent on the deceased is entitled to a claim for damages as a dependent of the deceased. So that includes the family of the deceased. So I'm quite sure that that argument was brought up before the courts, because who is Madam D? She is a dependent of her husband or her spouse. Whereas under the Law Reform Act, if she's not registered, she's not considered a wife. That's the difference. But we try and draw a distinction between the Law Reform Act and the Civil Law Act again, because we say that as a wife, you are entitled to, say, the matrimonial assets. But we do not talk about inheriting. So here it's a question of when your spouse is dead. So would that mean that you should have registered your marriage? So different courts, different judges take a different view of it.
So In other words, the interpretation of what wife means when it comes to dependency claims, when it comes to the will and inheritance, these are things that are governed in some part by a legal document. You have to sign a registration.
To register a marriage, yes, you need to register your marriage with the JPN. But with regard to documents as such, no. In this case, in Madam D's case, for instance, her marriage was not registered, period. And because of that, she could not claim, because the courts, or even the court saw it, that she was not the legal wife to the deceased. But the mothers, fathers, they can claim because they are dependents. In this case, I believe she had no children of her own. So she was only dependent from the deceased. Yeah. The father had died in the accident too, if I'm not mistaken, yes.
However, the Sessions Court, you know, it came to a different conclusion in 2011. And what would that have been based on? You know, so as you say, different courts, different judges.
Yeah.
So how would that have been awarded?
Because in the Sessions Court, they went purely under the Civil Law Act. And the Civil Law Act says that this clause for compensation and damages is meant for the benefit of the family who survived the deceased estate. So on that basis, she was awarded the sums because she would have had to prove that she was a dependent of the deceased. And based on that, the court would have awarded that sum.
Earlier this year, on January 7th, the Shah Alam High Court set aside the award after ruling that there was error in the finding of facts and law by the trial judge following an appeal by the insurance company. So this error, what was it exactly?
The error was simply this. Was she a legal wife to the deceased? And they brought in the Law Reform Act and they distinguished the meaning of a legal wife as opposed to a dependent to the deceased. And that is how she did not get her damages as prayed for in the Sessions Court. Yeah, that was the difference.
As a long-time practitioner of family law yourself, you know, where are you persuaded that this case, you know, which precedent should it follow? Which act should it be looking at? If it were something that you would be, if it's something that you were either presiding over or something that you were arguing?
Well, on one hand, we want marriages to be registered because the whole rationale of having the Law Reform Act, which was passed in March 1982, was to actually regulate customary marriages to avoid polygamy and also for the benefit of women and children who were considered vulnerable. In fact, it was under the, if I may just read, because the rationale for having marriages registered and parties who come from different race, religion. You see, it comes under the Declaration of Human Rights and it says that marriages shall be entered into only with the free and full consent of the intending spouses. And the family is a natural and fundamental group, unit of society and is entitled to protection by society and state. So, this is one of the rationale for registering marriages because we used to have women who were, if you're not married, then the poor woman will have to come to court to prove that she was a wife. And this led to many issues. And it was also to register, solemnize, and with regard to inheritance too. We needed children to be registered as legal, legitimate children, things like that. However, we still have problems of illegitimate children arising simply because of this. For instance, if Madam D had a child out of this union with her husband, that child would be deemed illegitimate. So the question again is, then we fall into the inheritance laws as to whether the child is entitled to inherit, although the marriage was, because the marriage was not registered. So we do still have these issues coming up. And that is simply because the old laws of the Civil Law Act, the Married Women and Children's Act, these are all very old acts which have not been amended to standardize everything.
What kinds of efforts would it take in order to amend and standardize old acts, such as the ones you've named?
Actually, it's not difficult because we have faced these issues time and time again. We cannot blame the courts because the courts actually merely interpret the laws which are produced before them. It is for the government, it is also for the Attorney General's office together to work with the Bar Council to ensure that these issues, especially when it comes to definition of wives, children, to be standardized so that there's no more, there shouldn't be any more problems like this coming up and a lacuna in the law, so to speak. So these are the issues that need to be addressed urgently.
I'm speaking today with Vicky Alahakon, family lawyer. We are discussing a recent ruling against dependency claims in customary marriages. Up next, we find out more about the Law Reform Act, as well as perhaps where this might go. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me today, Vicky Alahakon, family lawyer. We are discussing a recent ruling against dependency claims in customary marriages, specifically to do with Lo Chin Wee and his wife, making dependency claims and having that overturned. So there are some terms that I'd like clarifying. We have binding precedent and persuasive precedent. What's the difference between the two, and what do we practice?
See, in law, you have case precedents, which we use. And usually when it's the federal court, the apex court of our country, that is binding on the lower courts. So those are case precedents that we use. Whereas when it comes to going by issues like equity and things like that, courts do sometimes go beyond the law and they use equity to come in. Like in this case, for instance, they could have said, for purposes of the Madam D, who was able to prove that she was the wife, and if she could prove to the court that she was a dependent of her husband, some courts, or rather some judges, may be moved under equity to allow her that claim of being a dependent and therefore being entitled to compensation and damages. So we have two thoughts, but the law would be based on written law. And the written law in this case comes under the Law Reform Act, which clearly states that marriages have to be registered.
Earlier you brought up the issue of legitimacy when it comes to children.
Yes.
And that was something that I wanted to cover a little bit as well, because another piece of law related to this case is the Distribution Act 1958. Sounds again like another old law.
Yes.
Are illegitimate children at this point entitled to any of their parents' wealth and assets? I mean, is it again an issue of proving dependency?
Yes. For under the Distribution Act, it clearly says that a child has to be legitimate to inherit. However, you also have the case under the Law Reform Act. It clearly states that children who are illegitimate are deemed a child of the marriage. So you have conflicting definitions again. So these are things that lawyers usually argue. And this is where, again, the need to standardize the definition of a child, illegitimate or legitimate, and their remedies and their rights before the courts. Because if you're arguing, say, for the insurance company, you would say the child is illegitimate and therefore not entitled to inherit something like that.
We are talking, I mean, in this case, we have somebody who passed on and people claiming dependency. But there are also, of course, children who might be cared for by parents who are unmarried or perhaps they're in customary marriages. How are custody rights decided if the parents separate?
In this case, are you talking about legally married couples or
customary?
Customary marriages.
Yes.
Okay. If you have a couple who are not legally registered, the child technically belongs to, is given in custody, care and control to the natural mother of the child. And again, we look at the child's birth certificate. If the father's name is stated in the birth certificate, and the father's name is not stated in the birth certificate, then the mother becomes the biological guardian to the child. So we also have the Guardianship of Infants Act, which is, again, quite an old act, which protects children. And it also gives equal rights to both fathers and mothers over their children. in that sense. Yeah.
So if you have a biological guardian, you know, caring for a child, yes, can mothers compel fathers to pay child maintenance after separating? You know, you get custody, but what about maintenance?
Yes, yes, for the child. She can always go to court and claim for maintenance for the child.
So there is sufficient protection within the law?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Let's look at the fact that the Court of Appeal said that customary marriage after July 1st, 1982 afforded no legal protection. Why was that particular date set as the threshold?
It's not July, actually. It's March.
Okay.
March 1982, sorry. Yes, after 1982, March, marriages were to be deemed registered. I mean, had to be registered. Marriages that were contracted prior to 82 were deemed registered.
Okay.
Yeah.
When the Law Reform Act was being drafted, I mean, we've been talking about the difference between these two acts, but when this act was drafted, why was it decided that customary marriages shouldn't be recognised? You know, why the emphasis on registration?
That was simply because we had numerous claims being made by couples who had polygamous marriages. We also had children from various relationships, and it kind of affected inheritance, distribution, things like that. It was quite a mess, to put it very bluntly.
Right.
So there was a need to regulate and register marriages to give a status to the wives and children to that extent. Because our country, it's multiracial, it's multi-religious, and we have different customs, different... And when you come to court with the various customary marriages that were taking place, it was causing confusion. And we were also trying to move with the laws and the times. And we were following the English laws, where you have to have the marriage to be monogamous instead of polygamous. So we were moving towards monogamy. And that is something that we are pushing for in all marriages, monogamy.
And now that it's been 33, almost 34 years yes, of having this law, do you think that the time has come to recognize customary marriages? Or, you know, do we continue, this is something that works?
No, we recognize the customs and usage of each race and religion.
Sure.
Yes. However, when it comes to the law, there is a need to register. This is for certainty. And also to be able to help with the other laws, for instance, this dependency, distribution, and things like that, and also for the rights and remedies of the children as a result of these marriages.
Madam D's lawyer said that this was a landmark decision with serious implications for family law in Malaysia, especially when it comes to the area of asset distribution. Would you agree with that?
We have had many cases of this nature, and this is not the first. However, I believe this is the first case where the court has actually said that the wife is not entitled to damages simply because she's not registered. And because of that, it is a landmark case. And I believe that the solicitors representing the estate and the insurance company and the wife are planning to have a review of this case, which I think would be a good idea, because this would also encourage the Bar Council, together with the Attorney General's office, to actually standardize and regulate the old acts that we have, which actually are quite discrepant at the moment. Yeah.
Perhaps slightly unrelated, but I'm curious about this. So when we talk about landmark cases, when we talk about you know, cases that set precedents, how do they eventually become you know, issues that reverberate through the legal practice? Because I would think that there are, you know, multiple cases that could throw up, you know, interesting interpretations, interesting arguments. At what point does it, you know, get escalated to become something where people need to sit down and say, okay, we really do need to talk about the kinds of repercussions that this can set?
Yeah. It's simply this, the repercussions on society. Because in this case, if you look at it on the face of it, Madam D, if you look at the evidence, the Madam D, there was no doubt that she was living as his wife. The only thing was she did not have a paper to say that she was his wife. And based on that, she loses something which she needs for her survival. And the rationale for having amended our laws was basically to protect the vulnerable, which included women and children. And that is not being done simply because our acts are still so archaic and they need to be changed. And they need to be repealed, amended, standardized. And we are very slow at this. So it takes a case like this to open people's eyes and to make them understand and realize that a lot of work has to be done with regard to the law. As I said, it's not the judges who are making the laws. They are only merely interpreting the laws. So it is for us lawyers, together with the Attorney General's office, to realize these things are happening. When it's publicized, then everyone sits up and looks at it. But it's happening every day. We have many laws which are in the 50s and the 60s that need to be upgraded and changed.
We often throw around phrases like spirit of the law, letter of the law. In a case like this where, as you say, there is little doubt that she was living, they were living as man and wife.
Yes.
Is the argument then that we should follow the spirit of the law as opposed to the letter of the law? Because I think it's easier for non-lawyers to use phrases like that.
Yes, I know. I mean, on the face of it, it seems that the spirit of the law the court should have at least looked at that. We call it the equitable side of the law, right? But again, you cannot overlook the written laws, because the written laws are meant to be followed and also to be complied with. So that has to stand. We need laws. And the registration of marriages is important because it protects everyone. It protects the women. It gives them the rights to claim things in court. So if you don't follow the law, these are the repercussions you face. And that message must go out to the public, to the people, to realize that they have to do certain things and this is for their own good. So we have many cases of women who have not registered the law. I mean, have not registered their marriages. And sometimes they come to us and say, can I claim for division of assets, for instance, her property from the husband she's been living with but has not registered her marriage. So this is a repercussion. And when it's published and you say that she's not entitled to anything from the marriage simply because she did not register, it seems unfair. But again, she has not followed the law. So that is crucial. You must follow the law. Yes.
Looking ahead, should this case go to the federal court, does it have a shot there?
Legally, I would think no. Legally, she wouldn't have a leg to stand on. But again, we have to look at the evidence and the interpretation of the Civil Law Act, where even though she was not the wife, legally, was she a dependent of the deceased? And I think there the answer is she was a dependent. So you have that under the Civil Law Act. So which act does the court follow? That is the question.
Thank you very much for your time, Vicky. I've been speaking with Vicky Alahakun, family lawyer. We've been discussing dependency claims in customary marriages, as well as different acts, different interpretations, as well as the spirit of the law and the letter of the law, just a lot of legal talk in one show. You've been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.